Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to a new series of Wireless, a programme all about radio broadcast on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital, community, regional and national broadcasters, pirate radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history. Coming up on this edition of Wireless, we hear about Bear Island Community Radio in County Cork, a report on a visit to Irish language station Radio Fáilte in Belfast, and broadcast academic Rosemary Day takes stock of Irish community radio.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Until this year, no Irish island had its own station, but that changed recently when Bear Island in County Cork took to the air for the first time. Bear Island, which is off the Beara Peninsula, has a population of about 200 and covers around 18 square kilometres. The island is a partner in the EU Grassroots Wavelengths project, which aims to set up low-power community radio stations in rural communities in Romania, Portugal, Madeira and Ireland. Grassroots Wavelengths uses mobile phones and low-power radio transmitters to allow radio to be created and broadcast in a simple and cheap manner. We featured the Grassroots project on Wireless before, but this time we caught up with Helen Riddle in Bear Island and asked her to tell us about the new station.
I work with Bear Island Projects Group, a community group on the island, and I work specifically on the conservation plan, which was put in place by the Heritage Council as a way of preserving the island way of life, its heritage, its architecture and the environment, but at the same time encouraging people to visit the island and, more importantly, to come and live here and to stay living here. The radio project we set up in 2018, it's an EU-funded project through Grassroots Wavelengths to bring low-power radio stations to communities throughout Europe, which includes us, rural Romania, Portugal, Madeira, and UCC are also involved. It was just a way of really getting the island community involved in sourcing programmes, putting out programmes, and also, more importantly, the youth, to train them up as would-be journalists. It's a possible career for them in the future and a way for them to stay on the island. And really just to get the news out to the local community, we broadcast on FM wavelengths throughout Beara, as far as Bantry, and we'd include the Sheepshead Peninsula, and then obviously we're worldwide on the internet.
How many broadcasts have you had so far?
We have a temporary licence at the moment, 30-day licence. So the way it works, it's a couple of Sundays a month. We just pick Sundays. It's a good time. What we do is we broadcast the mass on the island at 10 a.m. every Sunday, and then our broadcast kicks in at 11 a.m. So it's by broadcasting mass. It's nice for some of the older generation who maybe aren't as mobile and can't get out to church, so they can tune in at home. It's just a nice thing for them. And especially the diaspora living away, it's their way of feeling connected to the island as well.
And what other types of programming then do you have when you're on air?
We have a wide range. We have news bulletins on the hour of just news events taking place on Bear Island and in the area we broadcast to. And also other local community organisations from throughout Bear will phone in and give a roundup of news that they've been working on. We have sports roundups. We found one thing which is really popular is the Postcards from the Past series, which some islanders will just talk about their memories of growing up here and stories and things like that. And we also do My Five Favourite Songs. People will pick their five favourite songs and talk about what those particular songs mean to them and why they picked them. So to date, we've had a wide variety of music, everything from opera to country and western to hip-hop, you name it, everything. So it's... And it's great sort of to hear other people's choice of music as well, which is nice.
And you also had a special broadcast for the local and European elections in May.
We did. We brought them in or we did telephone interviews with all the local candidates, literally just to sit them down and ask them what they could do for us and the island and what, you know, just to question and put them on the spot, as it were, which it went really well. You get all the leaflets in the doors and things and maybe don't read them all the time. So to actually hear them and have the questions they were asked questions and, you know, relevant issues to Bear and Bear Island. So, that went really well. It's one of our most popular programmes.
And is there a sense locally that Bear Island is not well served by local media? I mean, for instance, do you have your own local newspaper? Do you have many websites featuring news from the island? Or is there a clear gap there that a community radio station can fill?
There's definitely a need for a community radio station. Now, there would be a West Cork station which would cover our area, but I think just to have one specifically for Beara. On the island, we have a newsletter that's put out four times a year, just island events, and we do a Christmas newsletter. And a lot of the parishes in Beara would just kind of a roundup of the year. So we have that. We have a website with social media pages. So I think that the radio programme was just kind of the next, you know, natural thing to do. And there's still a good number of people do listen to the radio here, and it's the fact that it's from Bear Island, you know, and especially the diaspora, they love it. We found we're getting people contacting us from Argentina, Australia, all across the States, that they're all choosing Singapore, they're all tuning into Bear Island Radio, which is great news.
The power of the web as well as FM locally.
Yeah.
And has it been difficult to get volunteers to step up to the plate? Because it's one of the issues in community radio is the constant need to renew the volunteer and a circle, and it can be difficult to get people to volunteer for radio.
It can be. It was a bit like that starting off. Now, we have a steering group we set up to kind of operate and run the radio station, so it was kind of most of the people in the steering group were stepping up to the plate and presenting and researching and doing things. But it's a couple of islanders now have taken up, they're presenting it when we're on broadcasting on Sundays and taking in turns. And they're absolutely fantastic. They're naturals at it. So I think the more when people see or hear other people doing it, yeah, I can give a go at that. I can try it. So, and again, we have a great good number of volunteers for the music items, the postcard from the past series. So people are definitely, it was slow to start, and it's kind of gradually, I wouldn't say it's coming on quickly, but it's people are definitely showing an interest. But I think like all these things, they do start slowly until people find out what it's about and, you know, and we've a good few volunteers from the mainland as well. It's not just Bear Island, which is always good news.
And how are you dealing with the constant challenge and competition from social media?
I think our big positive thing for us is the diaspora. They love, they can tune in or listen. Now, we put the podcasts up in the past 2 weeks, so we're putting all our podcasts out. So I think the two complement each other. And as I say, because we're only on maybe twice a month at the moment, so it's kind of people are waiting. You know, if it's every week now, we might have to see how things go. But they look forward to it, and they're kind of, you know, every time you meet someone, you know, when's the next stage, when's the next program going out? So it's it seems they do complement each other at the moment, I think.
So it clearly is making an impact then locally.
I think it is. Yeah, people, they're always talking about, and even everyone's tuning in. And some days, you know, they rush home from Master kind of to listen in. So and again, people, you know, that's living away, it's their way of feeling connected to what's happening in Bear Island.
Very good. And you mentioned earlier the postcards from the past feature. Can you tell us a little bit about that and its link with your local oral history project?
Yes, it started out just as the first one we did was a man, John Joe Sullivan from Bear Island. He's now living in San Francisco. So he just relayed his story, how he came to move to the States, his life, just memories growing up on the island. And it proved such a popular feature. We've made it a regular feature now. And there's a few other people who have taken part in that. But as well as that, obviously, we're only broadcasting a short part of his interview, so we are storing the full interview in our oral history archive and the Bear Island Heritage Centre, and that's a project we've been working on for a number of years to preserve our oral history. So that was one of the main reasons for starting the radio project, really, was a way of doing this. So last weekend in Limerick, we had some representatives at the Oral History in a Digital World Conference to look at how we can publicise. We're still kind of investigating just the best way to kind of store these archives, even how we to go about doing the interviews. You know, some of the oral history archive interviews will be put out on the radio, others won't. So it's just really to work on that side of the project. But it's just we do need to preserve that part of our history, and that's an important feature the radio is helping with.
And how important is the community radio ethos for the station? Because I know that AMARC, the federation, the European Federation, indeed it's in existence in other parts of the world as well, for community radio, is a partner in the project.
They are, yes, that's right, yes. I think it's more, probably more so AMARC are helping the rural stations in Romania and Madeira, but they've been a great support to us. And it's really just it's a community radio station, it's by the community. The idea is everyone gets involved, either presenting, researching, the technical side of things, running the desk. So whatever someone's interest is, you know, so we're there and to help with the training side of things as well, we've had some great trainers on board. So, and again, to train the youth up, the National School have been fantastic and stuff they're doing and putting programs together and items. So it is to get the entire island involved, and AMARC have been a great help with us.
So it sounds like there's a very broad participation. Do you think, is it helped by the fact that you're an island?
I think it is. I think it's that can-do attitude on the island. If, you know, if it's different other projects we work on, it's kind of, you know, you start off working the project, things seem a bit daunting, but everyone comes together and helps out. And if you just pick the phone up and there's help on the other end of the line, you know, they will help out and get things up and running. So, and the first program we put out, it was great. Everyone was tuned in. So it went really well, and talking about it afterwards and sending requests in and things. So, I think when we first started the project, again, it's like anything until it's actually up and, you know, running, it's hard to kind of visualise what's going to happen. But we're very happy with how things have been going. We launched it last year at Heritage Week, so we're almost coming up to the sort of full year since the project was launched.
And do you have any connections with the low-power FM movement in the US? Because it sounds like there's a lot of similarities there.
Not at the moment. It's a European-based project, but we do plan, obviously, our main thing was to get the first programme out. And now we're going to start exploring linking up with other radio stations, and even if there's any way we can kind of syndicate programs or give programs to them and vice versa. So definitely, and I think especially with such a big number of Bear Islanders living in the States, to forge links with other groups as well, which we're open to that.
Fantastic. So you even have plans for a second radio station at this stage?
We do, actually. We're working with either Cape Clear or Sherkin. We're in discussions with those two West Cork islands. So the plan is just to, obviously, the way it's our coverage is only through the Beara Peninsula and, up to Bantry. So if Cape Clear and Sherkin, between them, had an aerial, that would bring in the other West Cork islands and Skull, Baltimore, that area as well. And again, there's nothing to say other areas in Ireland couldn't take up, you know, get involved as well.
So what are the long-term plans then for Bear Island Community Radio?
At the moment we have a 30-day temporary licence from the Broadcasting Authority, so obviously it's to go to the next licence up and take more programmes. And again, it's just more interesting, you know, we've lots of stuff on in the summer now, so obviously there's more coverage. We can do more programmes than that, with sailing weeks and swim weeks and festivals and everything happening. So we've plenty of content, ideas for content, so it's just really to get more people involved, which it's happening and people are getting involved, but I think these things, they do take their time.
And do you think that the island could sustain a full-time community radio station?
We'd like to think that, definitely. As I say, it's we're always looking to, as a way to keep people living on the island, and if it could, and eventually, this is talking sort of way down the line, if it ever turned into a commercial station, it's jobs for people, and especially the youth, to go off and train in journalism, technical side of things. So it's I don't see why it couldn't.
So Helen, just to finish up then, can you give us information about how people can listen to the station, both on FM and online?
If you're listening locally, it's on 100.1 FM, as I say, throughout Beara and Bantry, or you can listen online via our website, www.bearisland.net.
Helen Riddle of Bear Island Community Radio in Cork. You can learn more at bearisland.net. That's BEREisland.net.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Radio Fáilte is Belfast's Irish language radio station and has been broadcasting under licence since 2006, although it operated as a pirate before then. The station has a community radio licence from Ofcom, the UK communications regulator, and broadcasts on 107.1 FM from on top of the Divis Tower in West Belfast, so the height of the mast gets the signal further. With the help of funding from Belfast City Council, Radio Fáilte recently moved into beautiful new headquarters that will be the envy of many community and even some commercial stations. I visited Radio Fáilte over the summer and heard about its new facilities and plans for future development. So we're speaking to Máire Ní Cineachtaí and Fergus O'Hare from Radio Fáilte in Belfast. So Máire, I'll begin by asking you to tell us what you think is the importance of this beautiful new facility where we're sitting at the moment in West Belfast.
At first I'd say, because we're in such a prominent position in the city, at the edge of Belfast city centre, on the motorway which crosses from west to north, so we're very very visible. We've also got what we have now, which we didn't have before, are these great studios with proper soundproofing. So the station, which has been licensed by Ofcom since 2006 for the first time, we've got these great facilities, and so much potential will come from that. We see ourselves, again, back to position of the building as a centre point or a meeting point for people from all over the city who are learning Irish, people who would not have maybe come across the Irish language but are now becoming interested and are happy to come to our building. We have a nice little coffee shop where people can sit, and then the other facilities. So.
And Fergus, can I ask you to tell me who the listeners of Radio Fáil are? Who is the audience?
Well, we have a very broad audience. Obviously, it would be Irish speakers for the most part who listen to us, Irish speakers in Belfast and throughout the world. We broadcast in the greater Belfast area, but we also on the internet and can be picked up worldwide. Learners, people who are learning a language, tune in because they find it's a good way to get their ear tuned in and to learn the language. People who are interested in the music and the culture, because we do a lot of eclectic, we have a very wide type of music, or wide range of music that we broadcast here, and people enjoy listening to just for the music and for the crack. We cover the entire spectrum of subjects. It's not a youth orientated or an older person's oriented, so we've news, sports, arts, current affairs, and lots of different types of music are all covered, so lots and lots of people tune in, and of course then there are people who can't necessarily speak the language but still listen to us because they like the music or because they're interested in what's going on and what sort of things that we're doing, and that's why the building is such an asset now, because we're right here, as Myra said, central, very visible, so people can call in. People who are curious about the language can call in. They can sit and have a cup of coffee. And we found this in the past with the cultural land, for example, people coming in, and once they get to hear the language and see it being used, they get spraga. They want to learn the language. So it's a great way of attracting more and more people to the language. As we say here, the language belongs to everyone who wants to learn it. And we're here as a sort of living personification of that idea. Anyone's welcome to come in, have a cup of coffee. If they don't speak Irish, well, then we'll deal with them in whatever language they speak. But the whole atmosphere and ethos is Irish, so it's welcoming. The building is welcoming. There's lots of activities going on here, and there's lots of opportunities for new activities in terms of concerts and talks and lectures. We're going to be doing some Eastern arts. I can't even pronounce some of the things that have been planned. So there's lots of activities here in the building, and it's all a way of inviting people to become part of the Irish language community, enjoy the Irish language culture, and of course, at the top of the whole thing, we have the radio, which is broadcasting day and night, 24 hours a day, throughout Belfast and throughout the world. So it's a great asset for the Irish language community and the community in general.
But the on-air programming is all in Irish, so is that aimed at the fluent speakers then, or have you ways of bringing in less fluent speakers through the programming?
Well, the programmes are in Irish, but listeners or learners can listen and pick up. They get their ears tuned to the different words and the different sentences and so on. But also, for example, the morning show, and people have said this to us at the morning news show, where Owen would read the newspapers, he would read some of them in English, and then he'd discuss them in Irish, and learners find that that's a great way of learning because they hear the English and then they hear the Irish discussion around it, so they can connect the words and learn a lot. So it's for people who are fluent and for people who are learning, and we find that that's the major audience that we have, that people who are learning the language particularly tune in because they want to improve their vocabulary and improve their language skills. So it works for fluent people, fluent speakers, and for learners. And you need to be careful that we're not, I mean, we do some classes, but you want to make sure that you people who are already fluent aren't getting turned off just because you're repeating stuff. So the way it works very well for both fluent speakers and for those who are learning. And I suppose at the end of the day, sure, we're all learning.
And finally, Moira, based on what Fergus has said, do you think this is as much a community development project as it is a radio station?
There certainly is a large aspect of community development in what we do, and I guess we're funded to do a lot of that work, and the basis on which we were able to secure the funds to construct this building was around the community, the regeneration of the local area. The building is built on a site that was previously problematic in terms of antisocial behaviour and all of those things. So we're in an area of high levels of community of deprivation, and we see ourselves as contributing a lot to the regeneration of our community, and that is all about, it's the community that really matters. But we're an Irish language project, but a community development project as well.
Marder Nick Inachty and Fergus O'Hare of Belfast Irish language station Radio Fáilte, and you can listen online at radiofáilte.com.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
The National University of Ireland Galway held a symposium on alternative media during the summer involving Irish and international academics and researchers. The purpose was to discuss how community media, including radio, could remain resilient in such a challenging media landscape, and topics covered included alternative media outlets in Ireland, the UK, Africa and North America. As listeners to Wireless will know, I've been involved in developing an audio archive of Irish pirate radio in collaboration with the longtime friend of this programme, Brian Green, and we both presented our work to the conference also. More about that in another programme, but we now bring you the keynote address by Dr. Rosemary Day, head of the Department of Media at Mary Immaculate College in the University of Limerick. Rosemary spoke about the state of Irish community radio today, over 20 years since its legal inception, and identified the challenges facing the sector.
I think I know most of you in the room, and what I have to say may not be news to you at all, but I put some thoughts together, and in doing so, I hope I have something, maybe not new to say, but something that will bring us back to first principles. And in fact, that's, if I had to give a title to this piece, for want of a better word, I would say, you know, first principles are, in more simple and plain language, what are we at? What are we at? What are we doing? So I'm looking really at what community radio should be about and what we're trying to achieve. And I've already been singing the praises of Katie Moylan, who's here and whose paper I'm disgusted to be missing because I'm a long-time admirer of her work. And she has a new book out which looks at exactly that question of what does community radio actually do in society? What does it do enshrined in Irish legislation? It's to do with social benefit, but she's looking at case studies all over the continent of America. And she brings a sharp critical eye based on the theory of maybe the last 20 years or so to her analysis. So we get more than a description. So I'm giving her a plug before we even start. I'm not a personal friend yet, but I admire her work. So over the past 25 years in Ireland, as Andrew gave me a generous introduction there, I've had plenty of opportunity to examine what community radio is about at first hand. My own PhD back in the 90s was on that very topic. And my personal voluntary work, and I suppose my social life to a large extent, has revolved around community radio for over 30 years. So I feel old. I first encountered community radio back in Australia, and I was involved in setting up Radio na Liffey, which is the radio station for Irish speakers in Dublin, for the community of Irish speakers, which are scattered throughout the city. And later on, in the mid-90s, I was involved in setting up and establishing Wired FM, and the manager of Wired FM is here with us today. And also an Irish language project, which had a short enough life of only about 2.5 years, of Wired Limni, which was an Irish language project for the city of Limerick on a smaller basis. This sounds like a great spin autobiography for me, but I want to give you my background and position myself, as the Americans say. I was one of the founders of CRAIL, which is the Irish Community Radio Forum. And because of that membership, I was involved in forging the definition for Community Radio Ireland that we all work with. Now, I didn't come up with it, but together with the people who were doing the work, the stations, we created that definition. And the regulatory authority here in Ireland has used that definition ever since 1997. It hasn't changed in all of those years. And when I was working with CRAIL on a voluntary basis, I was privileged to be elected in Milan to the European Committee of AMARC Europe, which is a part of the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. And I served two terms, which gave me great access and insight to what was happening around the rest of the world and how the important principle of the democratisation of the media in particular is a priority for most community radio stations outside of Ireland, because it's something that we don't seem to think about here at all. I suppose we take our democratic rights as a right, and we don't consider them to be a privilege. They shouldn't be a privilege, but in many parts of the world that's not the case, and certainly in Ireland, I think, and one of the things I'm going to bang on about today is the need for community radio activists to be really aware of what happens in mass communication and whether or not we are promoting the democratisation of communication or whether we are actually aping the bad practice of commercial and public service broadcasters, which is a real danger for us. So then as an academic, as I say, I've had the opportunity to observe practice here in Ireland and also to read the work of others to inform my own critique of what we're doing and to assess the normative theory of some far greater brains than myself, people like John Downing and people from Australia like Meadows and Ford and Antonio Malucci and more recently Nico Carpentier, some really, really good authors whose work I admire and who cause you to think and to stand back and say, God, I didn't think of that. I have to look at that differently. Because I think often we can get so wrapped up in the practice and particularly in the difficulties of sustainability, finance and staff problems and getting the news on air or whatever, that sometimes we forget why we're doing it. So I suppose more recently, I've been delighted to serve on the board of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. I'm not so sure if other people are, because it's a difficult enough job. It's a job where, as regulator, you're checking up on whether people are fulfilling their remit and their contracts. But also it gives you an opportunity. And the reason I went forward for it was I wanted an opportunity to actually do something about the policy of the regulatory authority for, in promoting community radio. And I felt that as somebody who'd been involved for so long, I could actually make a difference there. And I thought that I'd go on the authority. And I had three things I wanted to achieve. I wanted to double the number of community radio stations. And I wanted to do something about gender inequity in the media industry generally. And I wanted to do something about the Irish language. And in two of those three things, I think I've achieved something. I'm not saying that to praise myself, my partner in crime in relation to the Irish language is sitting up here in the front, John Walsh, and just on Tuesday, our Parliament have produced, a Committee of Parliament have produced a new report on the crisis in Irish language broadcasting, based in large part and acknowledged to be on the work that we've been doing over the last 2 years, some of which we'll be sharing with you later. So with gender, you know, it just happened to come and coincide. It's like things in the ether with, you know, the Me Too movement came later, but with the Abby movement and the rest of it. And so we have a new policy on gender equality and some really good positive moves with the Sound and Vision scheme, etc., looking for, which has really increased the number of women at top levels in film production, certainly, who are getting the money and getting the chance to be directors and producers and scriptwriters. But with the community radio thing, you know, it was amazing to me. I was saying, how come there's nothing happening here? And I was all gung-ho, and I was told very early on by CRAIL, by the Community Radio Forum of Ireland, and by the executive in the regulatory authority to literally hold my horses and to put the brakes on, because the appetite wasn't there at the moment. And I found that very hard to understand. And I said, how come people aren't champing at the bit, dying to have community radio? And I said, there must be some reasons. Is it because we haven't spread the word? You know, have we not been evangelical enough? Have we not, you know, tried hard enough? Have we not spread the message? And it became clear to me that I don't think that's the case. I think the case is due to the trouble that so many community existing radio stations in Ireland are having. And those troubles are mainly financial, funding themselves, and compliance with regulations. And so I hear a lot, I serve for my sins on the compliance committee, which is the one that deals with the complaints committee, as I call it. And it's not in my nature to go looking for faults, but if you saw, and I can't name stations because we're not going to name it, but if you saw some of the travesties that have come across my desk in the last 4 years of stations who are not compliant with basic good governance and who are crying because they're in trouble, who are feeling totally overburdened, totally exhausted because they're trying to do everything themselves, or because frequently there's only one person in the station who is doing the work. And so if we're asking ourselves, what am I doing wrong? Then we're asking the wrong question, because it should never be the first person singular. It should always be the first person plural. It should always be, what are we doing wrong? And if there is no we, then you're not a community radio station. So I'm making it very simple here, but sometimes the old helicopter view is very handy. You know, we can be like the ants running around, but sometimes to look down from afar, or not down, but to look from a far distance, you can see things very, very clearly. And I'm not an accountant, and I'm not interested most of my life in, you know, ticking boxes and filling things in. But there's no doubt in business, and there's no doubt in charities and in voluntary organisations, that certain things work and they become the code of behaviour. They may even become regulations, and they're there for a reason, not to hamper or to stop people from succeeding, but actually to create the capacity to fulfil your potential. So putting it very simply, the regulations are there to have a board of management which has gender equity on it, okay? If you don't have women on your station board, if you find it hard to get the women, there are more women in the world than there are men, okay? Why is that? How can you ignore half of the world? How can you ignore more than half of your community? So you are doing something wrong. If you are the only person on the board who is coming to meetings, pushing the agenda, trying to get things done, why is that? I'm not saying for one second that you are pushing everybody out, but you are doing that because you feel nobody else is going to. So sometimes you actually have to step aside or say, well, I'm not going to do it. Or let the person who you actually think is incompetent do it. Let that person step forward. There are several supports from the BAI itself, which is a regulator and I suppose doesn't necessarily have to do these things, but through CRAIL, through the funding of CRAIL, which provides support in teaching community radio boards good principles of management and governance. And there is plenty of support for watching good practice in Ireland and, as I say, in academic work as well. So I was, as I say, appalled, and I had to put a brake on it. And I think it's a real lost opportunity for community radio, because the board that I serve with, the there's 12 people on the board, every single one of them, to a man and a woman, is mad about community radio. Those who hadn't heard about it before were completely bowled over, not just because I was described it, but because community radio, the executive came in from CRAIL, and people were blown away. So people from different backgrounds, the lawyers, the accountants, the journalists who had never encountered it before, said, what a brilliant idea. How come I haven't heard of this? This is fantastic. What can we do to help? The chairperson at the moment is very positive. But at the moment, there's no point, because community radio as it exists is in trouble. There are two stations that are, well, one has gone off the air altogether. Another two, I can name them because it's in the public domain, were in terrible trouble and were close to closing over the past few years. Clare Morris, just up the road from here, and previously Yall in Cork. Both of those stations have turned around. Clare Morris is working its way through its problems and has a totally new board. They were one of those examples of what I'm saying, where one or two people were controlling everything. We're exhausted. We're making really big mistakes. They now have a totally new board, and they're reinvested in their, re-engaged, I suppose, in their community, and their community is reinvested in the station. Yall is an even bigger success story. For those of you, lots of people are nodding. Small town, only 10,000 people, started off as one of the great stations in the pirate days, but became exhausted over time, as many people do. It was a bunch of four, I think they might have been 14 years of age, boys, when they started, and they're all older than I am now, so they're pretty tired. But about 10 years ago, they were in crisis. They couldn't get any women on the board. There were no women. The women wouldn't come. The fact that when women did come, they gave them the jobs of making the tea was not conducive to many women coming. But once that was pointed out to them, and in fairness, once they did a bit of work on themselves, they reimagined what they were doing. So they still had, have the quote here from Noel Cronin, who's a hero of mine, a hero of community radio, which says, our job always was bringing the people together. So once they realised that women were part of the people, and once they realised that there were different ways of doing it, and that they didn't have to, they were all tech heads, by the way. They were fantastic at putting tobacco tins together with a bit of copper plumbing and broadcasting. So they were amazing. But they needed, I suppose, the social side of things as well as the technical. Once they got that right, Yall today would be a flagship example of how to do things properly. They have great diversity on their board. They have great programming on air. But also, more importantly, they have programmes off air working with people with disabilities, people who are marginalised in different ways in the community. And they have become well known in Yall. They've moved premises from upstairs in a... was a church hall, two flights up, which made it impossible for anybody in a wheelchair to get up or down, to a much better premises, centre stage in the community. So all of that has been helpful, and I've gone off script here. So what I'm saying is that if it's still about I or me, then there's a real problem. The central plank of the community radio movement, as is said in our definition, is to empower, to be owned by the community that you represent, and to be managed by the community, which is a difficult thing. It can take a bit of work. Those things are also reflected in what I was talking about, the BAI's strategy for the last 4 years, and this is why I think it's such a lost opportunity. Three of the five pillars of that strategy are to promote plurality, diversity and sustainability. And I think three, plurality and diversity is one, sustainability is another, and empowering audiences is the most important one for us. So there were three out of five core aims that the board have. And I say had because we're all finishing up in February of next year. And I would hope that the next board that are appointed will be as amenable. But that wasn't always the case, because for years after we got the Broadcasting Act in 1988, the regulatory authority wouldn't think of licensing community radio. And in fact, as Jim Fitzgerald from Yall Community Radio said at the time, he said, what happened was we were all made come off air, and the commercial boys were given the starting line. And I know this quote off my heart, they started giving the starting line, the whistle blew, and they said, right, lads, you guys in the cars, off you go. And half an hour later, they said to those of us on the bicycles, OK, lads, see if you can catch up. And he said, of course, they couldn't. They had lost their core audience. They'd lost the few bits of advertising they'd had. And they'd lost the ears and the hearts of the people who were had been their core audience through all the time of the pirate rating. So I'm very disappointed. And I suppose I'm like a cross mammy or whatever. I'm kind of really fed up because I think that... what's happened to a large extent is our own fault. We're very tired in the community radio movement. We're overstretched. We don't have the resources. But within that, we need to look at how we work and how we manage our resources better. And we need to draw more on our communities. And that shouldn't be even needed to be said, because unless we are at the heart of our communities, unless the communities are at the heart of the station, we're about nothing. It's about me. It's about my broadcasting career. It's about my ego. It's not about actually making a change in the community, providing a space for people to hear their own voices and to actually discuss their problems and find their own solutions, which is what is at the core. So I'm not going to bore you with loads of definitions, but I'm going to come to two points that I want to make. One is poor governance is mismanagement, and it means failure. And the second is to ask ourselves, what are we doing in terms of the democratisation of communication? So, as I say, many of the problems that community radio stations are facing today can be sorted out by good governance, and there is help available for it. It seems always that good governance is just another burden. It's a bit like a chef in a very busy kitchen. He or she might be wonderful with food, might have fantastic ideas, but if that chef doesn't follow what in this country we call HACCP, which are the health and safety guidelines for keeping food in date, good hygiene practices, labelling food, etc., all the things that every person in a kitchen hates doing, but if they're not done, the kitchen will close down, the restaurant will close, or worse again, somebody will be poisoned. When you're in a kitchen where the HACCP plan is running properly, even though it's a pain, everybody gets used to it, and it actually frees up the chef and the kitchen porter and the waitresses and the waiters to do their jobs. And it's calmer, and there's no worry about what if the inspector calls, or there's no worry about did we send out the chicken that we had 2 weeks overdate, you know, which of course shouldn't have been in the kitchen anyway. So what I'm saying is the analogy rings true for community radio. those rules and regulations are there. Some of them are a bit annoying, but basically they're there to help us to do better. So we need to move away from mismanagement, and we also need to, as I keep saying, to remember what our first principles are about. I'm going to skip a few pages here. And as I said, Katie's book gives examples of good practice. We have examples internationally also from much older books and writing. Everybody knows Bruce Gerard's book, Passion for Radio. We have examples where community radios in Australia and in Bolivia and in Italy long ago were very radical and political. One of the things about Irish society is that we're not really political with a capital P at all. We have this awful rift in our political sector, which dates back to 100 years, and people say it's not there anymore, but it actually means we don't have a real right or a real left. Okay, we just have this blur in the middle where we're still talking nationalism. And the same is true, I think, in community radio, that we're busy doing what we think is good, we're busy being do-gooders, but we often don't think of the much bigger philosophical questions that are also political with a capital M with a small p. So 12 years ago, we were celebrating 10 years of community radio in Ireland, and we brought a number of people together to bring out a book which we thought would help people to know about what we were doing. And it was divided into three parts. The first part was written by station managers and regulators talking about the basic tenets of community radio. The middle part was giving examples of good practice from several stations. And the last part was a wonderful piece of nostalgia and memories from people. But we called it Bicycle Highway. And the reason we did that is because the bicycle, as an analogy, works very well still for community radio itself. And I'm going to just quote from the introduction to that, where it describes how radio is actually very much like a bicycle today. So rather than trying to be the souped up, wonderful, let's say, news talk or RT Radio 1 or whatever that costs a fortune to run, that has a really swanky reception desk, that has huge staff, etc., that works in that way, how we can make radio in a different way, not just because we don't have money, but because we don't want to make programmes in the same way. And because we aren't about making programmes in the first instance. What we're actually about is bringing people together, as Noel Cronin from Y'all says, and actually making a difference in the community. So this is just quite a long quote, but I think it sums up what I want to say pretty well. So it's a summer day and I'm freewheeling along, passing all the traffic that's backed up to God knows where. I'm getting where I want to go and I'm enjoying the ride. My bike won't take me around the whole world today, but I don't want to go there. I just want to get around my hometown. My bike costs me very little to buy. It's actually second hand and it's quite old. It costs nothing to run. Just a bit of energy and the belief that if I keep pushing, I'll get there. Sometimes I cycle on the road with the cars and the trucks. Other times I can go up on the pavement or off down a boreen that takes my fancy. I'm free. I go at my own pace. I meet up with others. We wave. Sometimes we stop and chat, or we travel along together for a while. I am not alone. I know there are many others cycling along like me all over the country and throughout the whole world. So what is a bicycle highway? And what does it have to do with community radio in Ireland? Community radio, as you know, is a movement which seeks to build the communities from which it springs and which it serves. And it does this by depending on the members of those communities to do it themselves. That means volunteers who work for no money and often on old equipment, which costs them little or no money at all. So the analogy of the bicycle is a useful one. In the days of high-tech gizmos, the information highway, which is 12 years ago, we don't talk about that anymore, and motorways, which are still there, built to deliver people and goods and services at high speeds, the very notion of a bicycle highway may seem an anachronism. However, we find today that the bicycle is a useful way to get around in cities, even more so now than it was 12 years ago, often more quickly than in cars or by public transport. The bicycle is cheap to buy and to run. Using it makes the user more healthy and protects the environment. It is ecologically sound. It may not be great for getting you across the entire country or for international, transnational travel, but for getting around in your own neighbourhood, there can be little to beat it. In the last few years in Ireland, we see second-hand bicycles in use by new immigrants, by the ecologically aware, by the well-educated and affluent, by the young, the student, the active retired, much like community radio. A highway is designed to connect people and places directly and speedily without obstruction or delay. What you travel on is another matter. Community radio connects people in communities with a minimum of mediation. The people speak to themselves immediately and effectively. So community radio is cheap and accessible, and it works well in a small space for a small group. If you only want to reach 10,000 people or less, it's ideal. It might be an old technology, and we're talking all about new social media at the moment, and they're of great benefit and use to community radio stations. And there are no Luddites or laggards amongst us. We're all using them, and the stations benefit hugely from their use of them. But I want to interrogate that in a moment. The reach of community radio, I would say, is still larger or wider, maybe deeper than those of new technologies, because to a large extent, the new apps that we use, whether it be Snapchat or even to an extent Facebook, which older people use and younger people have given up, or Twitter, which goes out there, comes from one person who can set themselves up, which is fine. We talk about that, being free to speak. But that person doesn't necessarily represent a body of people. And that person can reach the people who are connected to him or her because they've decided to follow them on Instagram or on Twitter or whatever, whereas the radio goes out into the ether. And believe it or not, more people in Ireland still listen to radio than are on other platforms. 83% of people in Ireland, it's one of the higher relationships, listen to radio on a daily basis. So most households have a number of radios and all cars, etc. The phone is improving. Our mobile phone is improving. We can now get the radio on our phone. We couldn't for a long time, and it's an improvement. And a lot of people I know are downloading podcasts, etc., often from community radio stations. But to me, community radio is like a bicycle highway because it connects people locally in a lane that goes at a different pace from most other media today. It's a lane that anyone can travel along, no matter what age they are, and where people of different ages, different economic backgrounds, etc., different diversities actually connect. Whereas often within our social media engagement with others, we engage with others who are like ourselves, same socio and economic demographic, same age profile, etc. So Snapchat for the under 25s, Twitter for the 30s, Facebook for my age and older. The reasons, I suppose, Leora Slater years ago said that community radio is like a two-way traffic on a one-way street. And that's another good analogy. Or the American, the African community radio, whose name I've forgotten, who says, nous sommes le radio qui vous écoute. We are the, excuse my accent, we are the radio which listens to you. So it turns things over rather than we're broadcasting out to you. We're telling you all about it. There comes back to the ego that I'm talking about. So even so, radio survives. And the mode of transport doesn't have to be flashy. It doesn't have to be a bicycle anymore. I think in ways we did ourselves a disservice by calling ourselves community radio rather than maybe community media, because the digital platforms give us the opportunity to be far more active and are cheaper and are easier to use. But we have to ask ourselves a few questions about them. The first, I suppose, is if we're looking at all people in a community, particularly all age groups, at the moment, until they all die off and the younger people who are now 14 become the old people of 70, there are still older people who aren't technologically able and who aren't on their phone all the time. Well, that's only a minor concern of mine. That's a big one. There is the fact that a lot of them aren't mass communication in the sense that we know and embrace that helps to democratise communication. Certainly something can go viral, it can be picked up, but we need to examine why some things go viral and not others. Things that are good for us, that are for social benefit, etc., rarely go viral unless they're promoted by a celebrity. And that whole notion of celebrity status is something that community radio activists have been actively working against since the very first day. We have enough pressure on us, not just on young people, but on people of all ages, to conform, to look like those who we admire, to look like the celebrities, to act in a very consumerist fashion. So why use formulae that replicate that and that strengthen that, rather than doing what community radio is set up to do, which is to question that and to provide different modes of speech. So we often use the example of how in a community radio station, when an issue emerges, the programmes can continue on and the issue can be dealt with, whereas for as long as it takes, as long as the community needs to keep speaking about it. Whereas with commercial radio, there's a schedule that really needs to be adhered to, and you can't bleed one programme into another. And the same with public service, unless it's something as huge as a national or international catastrophe. So, as I say, often the stories that we put out on social media reach the people that we target, but don't reach the wider community. So are we just talking to people who are like ourselves, rather than, as I say, the traditional radio, which goes further? I think we can use new social media and use it wisely. But my real concerns about social media are not for 1 minute not to use them, but there are four reasons I'm concerned. The first is that they're owned and controlled by global institutions. So the Googles, the Facebook, Amazon, etc. And those multi-millionaires or zillionaires or whatever have never, ever worried about the poor, about the marginalised, about those who need help along the way, about those whose voice isn't heard. They've always been about profit for themselves. And so in using their platforms, if we lose ourselves in them, and if we use them in the same way, and if we're not conscious of what has been done with them, we are guilty of doing the very thing that we set ourselves up to oppose. And because they're so pervasive and so easy to use, we can fall into that trap very easily. The second reason I have that I'm worried about it is that, it's lied to it, they're capitalist through and through, to the extreme end of capitalism. They promote consumerism and capitalism itself. In many cases, it's at its most extreme and pernicious and damaging forms. The third reason I have to be worried about it, and not to stop using them, but to have that debate with our volunteers and to think about it. It's a media literacy question, and it's a really urgent one, is that they prevent rather than promote the democratisation of communication. They seem to promote participation. They seem to promote engagement. We have a wonderful word, prosumer, because you're the producer and the consumer. And that's great. And it does, you know, it is much better than what was there before. But we can be seduced into thinking that that's empowerment. We can be lost in thinking that by pouring our messages into the formats that Instagram allows and using the filters, that we are actually challenging notions of beauty, our weight, our fitness, our wealth. Whereas we're not, because when we put our photograph into it, I don't know if this is natural or biological or if it's, I hope it's just culturally induced, we immediately enhance and we ape the formats that the Kardashians use or whatever. Just as when community radio started, the intention by many activists was not to fall into the trap of broadcasting to people about what they should be doing, how they should feel, how they should look, but actually listening, le radio qui vous écoute, listening to what people have to say. And I think if we're not aware of that, that we fall into the trap of becoming just another tool, which, to my view, actually oppresses people rather than freeing them, emancipating them and empowering them. And that's my fourth point, I suppose, that they force us to accept the hegemonic order, which is to look for the perfection and to see the hierarchy as being something natural that can't be challenged. So I say we can still use them, but we need to think about what we're doing and that we're ensure that we're not destroying the very democratisation of media which we want. Now, I owe a lot of this to the work of Hassan, who is just publishing a new paper in the Community Association of Broadcasters of Australia. I've got that acronym wrong because it's CAB, but Community Radio Association of Broadcasters in Australia. And he says, to step back from the minutiae of creating and distributing community radio, or maybe she says, I'm falling into the trap there. So Hassan says, to step back from the minutiae of creating and distributing community radio content, we need to consider the logics, the commodifications, and the consequences of digital disruption. So he describes the digital, I'm skipping bits here, but he describes digital, I would recommend the paper to all of you, and I'll give you the reference afterwards. He recommends that He says that digital capitalism is a term which is used to describe the very important role that communication and information products have and technologies have in driving consumption and profit today. And in so doing, it often means that we don't realise the presence of the owners of that entity, which is based on growth and increased profits, and which is packaging our communities, who we're driving onto communication with us through Twitter, through Snapchat, through Instagram. We're driving that, and it's going to be good. But we're also selling our audiences, selling our community to these conglomerates. So we all know bits about, I'm not technical at all, you know, the algorithms that pick up on what you're doing, etc. We're actually feeding. We're like feeding the sharks. And I think we need to be careful about that. We might think that we're somehow hip or contemporary by doing it. Sometimes, as I say, come back to the analogy of the bicycle. It doesn't have to be a bike. It could be a scooter. It could be your pair of runners that you're walking in. But come back to that and think about, how can I do this differently? Or if I am going to jump on the Twitter feed or whatever, how am I going to use it so it's going to challenge that as well as getting my message out? Because, you know, sometimes how we say things is as important as what we're saying. And often we just see the package that's presented in front of us, very stylish, lovely and slim, looks like the model, or frumpy and I won't bother listening to that person or whatever. And that's not what community radio is about. So, I think I'm going to move on to my conclusions there pretty quickly. The idea that we are working in a different space and for different first principles is something that we all need to go back to our stations and discuss with our volunteers. And it's tiring. It takes time. It's not something that gets the job done or a job done, but it is something that's essential. For good governance, you have to consult with your community, but also to help you get people to run your station. And even before you think about that at all, think about, why are you doing it? So if you're not there with your community, and if you're not helping them to be themselves, not to be packaged and sold off, not to speak or photograph in a way that they think from early days on is the way to do it, to show them other ways to express themselves, that if we don't do that, then we're failing in our mission.
Dr. Rosemary Day of the Department of Media at Mary Immaculate College in Limerick, speaking at the Symposium on Resilient Community Media last June at the National University of Ireland, Galway. And that brings us to the end of this month's edition of Wireless on Flirt FM. Join us again on the first Monday in October for more radio news and features from home and abroad. I hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. We also have a new website, wirelessflirt.radio.ie. Until the next edition of Wireless on Flirt FM, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.